Good morning. And a happy Mother's Day to all of us. All of us who mother and long to mother others, and all of those of us who have been mothered and longed to mother others. I love the question that Jesus gets thrown at him in today's gospel, and I resonate with it in my own life too. I think I'd have been with that group insistently asking him. Jesus is walking through the temple on a winter's day in Jerusalem, and this group gathers around him, sounding, to be honest, a little desperate and frustrated, with some longing thrown in. And they say, "How long are you going to keep us all in suspense, Jesus? It's almost unkind of you, Jesus. If you're the Messiah, just hurry up and tell us." I hear the longing, maybe a little hope and a little fear, which are two sides of the same coin, I think. It reminds me of when I was a child and I used to lie in bed at night telling God, "I really would appreciate some obvious, undeniable sign that you are real." Since some of the stories I was reading in the Bible did not seem that different than some of the fantasy novels I also loved. I remember reading the Bible story about when God wrote on the wall in the book of Daniel, and staring hard into the night, I willed a message to appear on the ceiling of my bedroom. Or that story about when God stops the sun in the middle of the sky when Joshua asks him to. Book of Joshua, chapter 10, in case you want to read it this afternoon. So God stops the sun so that Joshua and the Israelites can win a battle. And apparently God does this, and I reasoned with God, letting him know that I had much nobler motivations for interrupting the celestial order, simply just to know he really was who he said he was, and that I wasn't wasting my time with all this Christianity stuff. And only he and I would ever have to know. So please, God, what is there to lose? What was there to lose? This question asked of Jesus reminds me of the prayers I sometimes hear in the jail where I work. "God, just let me get out of jail, and I know that then you are really who you say you are. Let my court case go well, God, and I'll know you're really God, and I promise I'll do better." Pretty similar to some of my prayers. "God, let my kids turn out okay, and then I'll trust you. God, please write my essay for church history for me, because I mean, you know it way better than I do. And I promise I'll work really hard after that." So what is there to lose? As I reflect now, I think I can see what I might have lost had God written on my ceiling, or stopped the sun, or made my kids okay. I might have gained some proof, some certainty, at least in the short term, and maybe even a thrill in the moment. But what would I have lost? I might have lost the need to trust Jesus, to listen to his voice rather than demanding action. I might have switched out being part of the team, actively playing the game on the floor, for spectator faith from the comfort of courtside seats. I might have lost the good shepherd and switched him out for a divine helicopter parent, ready to swoop in and assure me and intervene anytime I felt uneasy. Because what Jesus offers is not proof, but his voice. And not certainty about identity, rather certainty about an eternal commitment to each one of us. It's a very different kind of faith based not on answers, but relational trust and connection. I think this is one reason that those who crafted our lectionary put Psalm 23 in here. Now, if you picked it up, there's a bit of a shepherd theme at work today. Jesus picks this up. inviting us to consider faith in God as more like the relationship between a sheep and a shepherd than a question and answer or debate and proof process. So what is your relationship with God more like? And what direction do you want that to move in? For myself, as someone who studies and speaks about God for a living, it's very easy to slip into a question and answer mode of faith. Is hell a real place or not, God? Is it important for me to believe everything I say when we recite the creed every week, fully, without doubt? Is there any wiggle room, God? What do I do with some of those horrific, heartbreaking, unfair stories I hear in the jail every week? And how do they fit with your sovereignty? And really, God, an ongoing question for me, what is the deal with predestination? So these are all great questions, I think. And God, how long are you going to keep me in suspense? Will you just give me an answer one way or the other? His answer, I'm your shepherd. Will you be my sheep? Now, maybe like me, you don't spend too much time with shepherds or sheep. And though this sounds kind of quaint, it's hard to really understand what it means in practice. And you won't be surprised to hear there are several good books out there written by shepherds about what it's like to be a shepherd and a sheep. And given that many of the Bible's greatest figures were once shepherds, say David and Moses to start with, it's worth delving into. But today I want to invite you now for the rest of this time together to settle down, to reflect on maybe one of the most well-known, well-loved, oft-quoted parts of the Bible. And imagine letting go, just for a moment, of questioning as a paradigm for your faith life and embracing sheep life instead as a model for how to move forward with God. So join me for a moment in settling, reflecting, and contemplating together. The Lord is our shepherd. And what is the first thing on the agenda of our shepherd? He lies us down in green fields and leads us to still lakes. He provides rest, food, and drink in a beautiful place. He revives and restores our souls. He guides us, Hebrew saying, literally leads us kindly down good paths. And the tense of the verb is imperfect, meaning it's unfinished, it's in process, it's ongoing. It's a good path and we and God are still on it. Rest. Restoration. Kind and gentle leading. As we come to God with our questions and our pain, and our uncertainty and doubt, God's answer is to lead us kindly to places where we find restoration. Restoration for our mind, our soul, our body. Maybe that's as simple as a walk in the quiet by Shoreline Lake, or gardening in our backyard, walking the dog in the morning, or driving to Half Moon Bay, or listening to music at home while you close your eyes for a moment, or whatever it is that restores your soul. An invitation, next time you do one of those things that restores your soul, stop for a moment. Pause, internally acknowledge that your shepherd is there with you, leading you into restoration, and that this moment of rest could be part of the answer to your struggles and questions. and let God be with you as you engage that moment. The psalmist goes on to acknowledge that sometimes life is going to lead us through some deep, dark, frightening valleys. And the shepherd doesn't miss a beat. The shepherd doesn't detour. He walks with us through them. And in the presence of a shepherd armed to defend us and guide us, these paths need not induce panic and dread, but can, though uncomfortable and painful, actually even be part of the good path that the good shepherd kindly leads us down. Maybe some of those dark valleys are valleys of faith darkness. Times where we can't see God and are desperate for answers and a shred of certainty. How long are you going to keep us in suspense, Jesus? Can't you just show yourself? Maybe there are times we're facing difficulty in relationship or at work. Times when a diagnosis throws us into disarray. Times where the world is torn apart by tragedy. Times when our friends in the jail wait years for cases that determine the course of their lives, decided by a system that seems weighted completely against them. Don't panic. I am walking this path with you, and I will not leave your side for one moment. And I can defend you against the enemies that come at you. And I can pull you back when you stray too far. So let's walk together here a little longer. In the jail, I meet people whose lives are really, really, really in dark places. They've been abused and abused others. They've been beaten and beaten others. They've been accused rightly and wrongly, and usually it's a mixture of both. Their families, their friends, their jobs, their houses, their dogs, their churches, everything is lost to them. They are often mentally ill and addicted to many things, facing decades locked up. And there is nothing, nothing, nothing that I can say to make it feel better. And it would be presumptuous of me to assume I could. So much of my job is to listen well and not flinch when details of deep and dark pain are expressed in sometimes expressive language. And there is no solution. There's no to-do list. There are no action items at the end of the conversation. And I cannot express strongly enough how so often people, after being listened to, express huge relief and incredibly transformation starts to happen simply by being listened to. Knowing that someone is walking with you through a dark valley. And sometimes that someone is you or I listening to and walking with another. But ultimately we all point to the Good Shepherd who never leaves our side. And what you and I can do is bear witness to that shepherd and help one another remember and reach out a hand when we've forgotten the shepherd is there. Finally, in the psalm, the shepherd prepares the best feast ever and sits down to eat it with us, anointing us, filling our cup to overflowing in the presence of our enemies. Now there's a picture to imagine and dwell with. And of course, it's maybe slightly snarky to imagine gloating in front of those people whom we don't like. Like putting on my Warriors shirt and celebrating in front of Houston fans. Which I will. And maybe that's what the psalmist is getting at, but maybe it's those more insidious enemies that God invites us to overcome and feast with him in front of. Our own internal demons, fear, hopelessness, despair, anger, bitterness, unforgiveness, disillusionment, cynicism, systemic brokenness, privilege, racism. Whatever it is that the enemy uses to draw your focus off of the shepherd. What are those enemies for you? Can we feast with God while they look on in dismay? So one last invitation. Instead of thinking, planning, worrying, analyzing your own issues and problems and demons, those things that keep you up at night, imagine for a moment right now, letting go of them and putting them into the hands of the Good Shepherd who is beside you. Knowing that there may be a time when he allows you to pick them up again. And as Lindy and Matt and our team prepare the Eucharistic table for you this morning, imagine the Good Shepherd beside them preparing the feast and inviting you to this table. And those enemies of yours, whatever they are, imagine them somewhere in the parking lot, watching helplessly as you come forward to receive the bread and the wine, to eat and drink with God, to absorb those wonderful promises of eternal goodness and mercy in the house of the Lord forever. The ultimate feast. Because, my friends, the answer is not going to appear written on the ceiling. It's not going to be knowledge or certainty, but it will be a meal with your Good Shepherd, an invitation to travel the road with him, which he will lead us kindly down. Amen.